everyone. Thank you for joining me. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into cells and then reforms into the butterfly. And while that can't be easy, it then has to struggle in order to be strong enough when it's out of the cocoon in order to be able to fly. And so none of that is easy, in my opinion, and neither is busting through those limits that society places upon a person. And today I have two people who are going to share this wonderful thing that they are doing, and they're going to share with us their journey to getting to that point and share with us how you all can be involved with it as well. So thank you, Kristen and Abby from Dyslexia Together Box, for joining me today. How are you both doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us. This is Kristen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Abby.
Okay. Oh, great. And your names are the opposite way on how you type them in. So I'm going to get you mixed up probably. It looks like you guys are having a much more bright day than what I'm having here in Southern Illinois. We have a rainy day today, which is great because we need it, but it tends to make things a little bit darker. So each of you take a little bit and introduce yourself and kind of what brought you to the point that you are today.
Okay. I'm Kristen, and we want to share a little bit about our story, both as individuals, where our paths have crossed, and then I guess primarily too to share our business that comes out or is rooted from our journeys. And our specific journeys are with dyslexia, and it's Dyslexia Awareness Month, so we're excited to be here for that. And feel free to ask us any questions as we go along, but I'll just kind of jump in. And then my son is now a teenager. I have two teenage boys. So me personally, I have, I guess, both the privilege and a little bit of the pain and burden of being able to connect the dots backwards at this point. So I'm able to speak from that and want to speak from that to be an encouragement that ultimately it is going to be okay. But it was very early on in my personal journey that I realized, I tend to be an optimist, I should back up, or I used to be anyway. So I am now still an optimist, but a little bit more of a realist. But I realized very early on sort of the mindset of, okay, buckle up, buttercup, you're in for a little bit of a bumpy ride. So it has been hard, but we at this point don't want to focus on just the hard, but it's important to talk about that also. But also find ways along the journey to celebrate. I've learned both with parenting in general, and then especially as you're parenting a child who learns differently, that every stage is both wonderful and difficult, and you just have to find ways to navigate that as you're going through it. And then I can let Abby just share a little bit about her personal journey, and then we can go from there.
Hi, I'm Abby, and I have three children, who two teenagers and then almost teenager, actually. And
are you both not completely gray, having each of you having two teenagers? Like, I had one go through the teenage years, and I'm like, oh, yeah, all these are up here because of that.
Yes, for sure. I've really enjoyed this stage of parenting in a lot of ways. It's just, it seems busier is what I'll say about this stage. But we started our dyslexia journey when he was pretty young. It's my youngest son who has been identified as having dyslexia. And he was in preschool, and our older children went to kindergarten at this wonderful preschool. And we just said, no, I think he needs a little more structure. I mean, so we knew something was different even at that point. We were calling it structure. And so then he went into school and really struggled from the start. I mean, I think by kindergarten he was on the right level reading, that, you know, the prescribed level. But apparently an orange folder had been started. I didn't know what that was. I wasn't even told about it until the following year, when the new teacher introduced herself and said, "So he's one of my orange folder kids." And I was like, "I'm sorry, you're what? What does that mean?"
Yeah.
And what does that mean?
Yeah, what does it mean? So I still, like, it was on that journey. And, it, you know, their basic thought, I had a couple of friends who were teachers, and they said, "Oh, I wouldn't worry about it right now. It just means they're keeping their eye on him." And I said, "Well, okay, that's fair." But they still, he struggled to learn to read. And he had great ideas. He has an enormous vocabulary, super bright. And many teachers would just say, "He's so bright. I don't understand why he's not picking this up." And these are veteran teachers, you know. And so we kept pursuing because he was struggling. And I thought, I can't lose this time frame. So I think it was in second grade when we started pursuing outside testing. At the same time, his teacher pursued in-school testing. She started that process for us, which I didn't even know at that point that you needed to do both. Like, that was foreign to me. You know, it's a steep learning curve, this dyslexia journey. And then once we finally had a name for this different way of approach to learning, dyslexia, it just felt really hard. Like, we'd been on this really hard journey, and I didn't want it to be so hard for other people when this is statistically 1 in 5 people have dyslexia. So that's just, an enormous amount of the population.
Yeah.
Dyslexia is not what I thought it was at all. I thought that it was mixed up or backward, reading backwards or mixed up letters. And, you know, dyslexia, a person with dyslexia sees the written word the same way. It's just they use a different part of their brain to process the information. So it takes longer. And there's a lot of gifts, and because of that different neural pathways, that they can see the world too. So there's a huge amount of strengths that come with dyslexia that we learned about over this journey too. So all that to say, we really wanted to make other people's journeys easier. And
from what we've learned.
Yeah, from what we've learned, and bringing resources together. And that's taken its own journey, I would say. So
just to kind of up then how the two of us, we were actually roommates in college, and then as life can do, we, our paths went different ways, and then, several states and moves later, we actually ended up that our children were in the same, preschool, and it was a duo approach, so, just a lot of hands-on learning and experiencing. And that was a really good experience for all of our families, and a platform that, that showing, you know, we respect education. It was important to us. We thought that this was just a beginning step in what would be this amazing education experience. And then things just kind of kept not adding up a little bit for my personal journey with my son. And so for us, it was always, there's a missing piece. So every professional we went to, there's a missing piece was basically what it ended up being. So it was actually many, many years until we were able to, until we had an identification that this missing piece was actually dyslexia, because it played out a little bit differently than I thought that what dyslexia was, just across language as a whole, spelling and processing and speech for him. And then being able to take that and really use it as a learning piece. With the professionals we've met, we've been really very fortunate to have amazing people on our journey. And it's important, and Abby has too, and it's very important to us to try to remain or be intentional about being bridge builders instead of getting upset or staying, again, being negative. Like, there's moments in that. I've had a few moments where I was like, I think I definitely have surprised my husband at least in a conference a couple times. Like, where did that come from? But I think ultimately what it comes down to is, in part, learning to share your story. So in talking with you a little bit a few days ago in prep to do this, you shared that we are able to share whatever part of our story that we want to. And I appreciate that. But then it also causes pause of like all of these years, like, what do I even share or how do I share that? And depending on where any person has walked in on our story, I was a different parent. I was a different person. My child was a different child. And like, always the same, but there's, to be real honest, there are pieces and parts that, of him that we were losing along the way, part of the amazing things that make him uniquely him. So that was kind of where we, as parents, my husband and I kind of learned to put pause and say, where are we? Is our focus only going to be on whether or not, or to at what level he can do the, or what time frame, if he's doing exactly the same as everybody else at this time, at this age, or having to make that shift and focus more on what are his other interests? What are his other gifts? What are, so that's a lot of where we've shifted as parents. And that's a lot of the foundation of the framework for our business. And we're going to tell a little bit more about that here really shortly. But I just think that's important to kind of lead up to what brought us here. And all of us, all of your listeners, they've learned the hard way that they're capable of hard things. Yeah. However, the constant hard can become very weary. You can get weary in that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask each of you, because you both mentioned the length of time that it took to find that missing piece, you know, that dyslexia diagnosis. When that was given to your children, how did you feel? And did your child relay how they were feeling now that they were given, like, this is what it is. You're not making this up. You're not doing this on purpose.
So I can start. My son, the first thing he asked is, am I going to die from this?
Oh.
So, because it sounds like a scary word. And it's
sure.
And he was pretty young.
And he was young. He was 8. So once we said no, this is, you know, just part of the name for how you learn and how your brain works. And then I think what we started focusing at that point too was talking about the many famous dyslexic people that he would have known. I mean, at that point, you know, Walt Disney and Stanley, who's the comic book person?
Stanley.
He had dyslexia. So, you know, some of those where he could really relate with those folks. And so then he thought, oh, okay, that's good. And he has been, it's been so much a part of his growing up years. And I think it was a relief to him because he could feel the difference. Like he has the intellect, certainly more than enough that to know that there's, he should be catching on, you know, that there's a reason that he felt relief that there was a reason that he wasn't catching on, that it was so difficult, I think. And he has embraced the dyslexia part of him.
And how did it feel to you to finally get an answer,
a definitive answer? Yeah, I think there was relief for me. It was relief to know, because then I thought, okay, well, now I know ways to help, or there are ways to help. That's what I felt. I also probably felt guilt though too, that because I mean he struggled for 3 years in his young life, I would say. I would say guilt was part of it, just not but I didn't know, you know, and that's
right.
Like teachers are taught very, very little about dyslexia. It's like a chapter in a book. That's changing now.
That's improving.
It's improving. And depending on what this, you know, where the colleges are and things. But even, you know, 4 years ago, that wasn't the case necessarily. So the teachers that he had at that point, they didn't know either. So I think it's learning a lot of grace for all of us too, and giving each other grace, and because we all want what's best, you know.
Yeah.
But there's not the way to help, but there are many ways to help. So
Well, hopefully you're not still feeling guilty. Hopefully that has gone away, because it, you know, for anyone who is listening or watching, that we can only know what we know.
Right.
And, you know, like you just said, Abby, the fact that, you know, you have these experts who are supposed to know some of this stuff, not even cluing in.
Right.
You know, there's it's just not likely that you would know.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not my background by any stretch of the imagination. And so, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, Kristen, what is your answer to those questions?
So for us, it was a little bit different. We knew from a very young age that there were some differences. My family and some of my closest friends are educators. So we were kind of just noticing a few things even from a young age, or not necessarily that we would ever think dyslexia, but just some patterning and things that turned out to probably be a part of his dyslexia, but none of us had any clue that that's what, I mean, so patterning things like learning to ride a bike, tying shoes, those kind of things turned out to also be actually what ended up being that we all put all those pieces together to realize that's what it was and to go ahead and be tested. And he had had all sorts of testing, probably anything that could have been done. We kind of decided to take advantage of every available resource.
Except you didn't ask.
Well, that's what I was going to back. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say. So we went through lots of different neurologists, specialists. He was getting services through all this time. And I think those things helped. But then it turned out for some of the specific testing we had to ask, we would have had to ask at that time. It's been corrected now, but at that time we would have had to specifically have asked for it to be tested for dyslexia. It wasn't even remotely on our radar that that's what it may have been. So again, I'm grateful that that's been rectified in response to our own journey. They were able to change some of those policies. And we live in Ohio. I don't know if we said that, but so obviously every state is a little bit different. Some are further ahead, further behind as to where, but there's a lot of really great changes happening here in Ohio. And especially, every month is Awareness Month for us, but we're glad to be able to celebrate some of that that's happening right now as well. But as far as, I think the original question was time frame, like how you felt. For my son, in some ways it was a relief, but in other ways we'd already been, and as parents too, but we'd already been parenting who he is, his whole self, and dyslexia, right. We didn't have a name for it. We were just parenting the missing piece.
Finding ways.
Yeah, finding ways. And then Abby's personality, she's a really great researcher, learned everything about it. I do that some, but I'm also, and she probably is too, but very much like a trust your gut person. Mm-hmm. I always knew there was something big that was being missed. So to continue to pursue and push through that. So for me, I can feel with great confidence that everything that we knew to do or could do, we did. And then I guess that's the part that was then disappointing. And then when you finally got the name, I thought it was going to be easier. And for us, that wasn't the case. Part of that was because of his age. So you can't really go, like, we can still do remediation and things, but it was a little bit different. And the only thing I really remember my son asking was, oh, okay, can you still win the Nobel Prize? I don't know why, that's not something that because we were on a walk, just kind of like processing, and then the same as Abby, just like researching, okay, what does this even mean? Or who are other people that have this? Not only like bigger names, but do we know anybody locally? So that was our process, I guess, with it. And I mean, we're still on a journey as far as figuring out what it means or what it looks like. And then, like I said earlier, like every stage of parenting has both wonderful and difficult things. So the ages and stages of dyslexia brings up all sorts of different things that I never thought about. Now, like with learning to drive and applications for jobs, we were working on that last night, applications for college, what are the best options for me next? So all of those things are again, things that I'm hoping that with Abby and I being a little bit further ahead in the journey than some people, that we're able to share those. For the most, obviously, all of us, our story is very unique. Our child is very unique, but there are significant parallels, at least with the people that I've talked with, where at times, I know Abby and I each have experienced where almost you thought they were telling your story, like it was that closely related that they were talking about their own struggles and strengths on the journey with their child.
Yeah. So you've each, and you kind of hinted at this a second ago because you said you're in Ohio, but you've each said different. So Abby, you said that textbooks are changing in training teachers. And Kristen, you mentioned that, you know, the testing for dyslexia is changing. So when you talk about that, are you talking about just in your own state, in your own home area with doctors and diagnosticians? Or is there something federally changing that I am not aware of that I would be super excited to be aware of?
On a state level.
Okay.
I think decoding dyslexia and the International Dyslexia Association chapters throughout the country are making big strides through legislation. We follow that some. That's not been our, that's not where our focus for advocating
sure.
dyslexia has been.
But we just know there are a lot yeah. more training. So the answer is both. I don't know about on the federal level everything, but I know state there definitely have been things, and then locally we're definitely seeing changes both with all across the professions and with parenting. Like we've tried to do a lot of awareness activity simulation, so the conversation is increasing, the understanding of what we're even dealing with is increasing, and then I think more services are becoming available.
And I would say, and I think there is in education, in universities, in education majors, it's becoming a requirement in Ohio, at least. And I think that's my understanding is that's starting to happen
for the teachers.
Yeah, for
educators.
Teachers, right. I think that's starting to happen across the board. You know, I mean, it's as far back though, even as like, I believe it's a 2015 letter from the Department of Education that went out to all schools. And it said, if it's dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, or dyspraxia, say it, put it in the IEP, put it in the 504, you know, it's okay to name it. I know that's pushback that I have received in my son's things. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was one of my hot moments there in a meeting. My husband afterwards, he was like, you kind of went a little hot. I said, I did not. I was just saying.
Here's the documentation that says you can do this. Please do.
And you're carrying a lot of emotions at that point in the
journey.
So, yeah, I think there, I know a lot of the decoding dyslexia and IDA, the International Dyslexia Association chapters are really making big strides. I mean, in Ohio, the group that's specifically in Columbus, but I know they have both support from Cleveland and Cincinnati areas too, are really just making enormous strides. It's been amazing watching their journey. We were just honestly coming in, like knowing that we were on the dyslexia journey when a lot of that was coming in and changing.
That's awesome. So, because and you had mentioned it, that there's just like one chapter in a book. And for anyone who doesn't know what a teacher training in a university looks like, and mine was 100 years ago, so mine will be a slightly different than what they are today, but it's still really pretty much the same from even brand new teachers that I talk to. Is if you're getting your general education certificate for, you know, the primary grades, you get, you know, in total to get your degree, it's like 120 to 130 credit hours at a university level. Out of that, 6-ish hours are mandated for special education. And then out of those 6 hours, wow, it's one chapter out of a book.
Yeah.
And so even for, you know, even the like dyslexia, learning disabilities, you know, those are fairly known, but even for, you know, like Down syndrome or ADHD, it's still, no matter what the topic is, if you're a gen ed teacher, your amount of education regarding anything related to special education is very, very minimally required. Now, if somebody's interested, they might take more. But for those who aren't, it's, you know, they don't choose that as an elective, then they have 6 hours, 6 credit hours out of those 120 to 130. So it's like a blip on the radar when yeah. they're hearing about some of that stuff. And oftentimes those are the classes that they get early on in their career, education career. And so by the time they graduate, a lot of them have even forgotten the little bit that they did have.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I'm happy to hear that it is becoming more important at the universities, at least in Ohio, to make a big deal about dyslexia and some of the other disabilities, because we require our gen ed teachers to if their IEP team decides, to take everybody into their classroom. And yet we don't train our gen ed teachers well enough.
Right.
So just a side note, as a special education teacher, you know, and even us as special education teachers, you know, there's so much to learn that it is just a little dot in our education about each specific disability.
Right.
So continuing training is a beautiful thing. And right. For anyone who's watching whose child has an IEP, no matter what it is for, there is a section in there for supports for school personnel, and you can put in there specific training for your child. So if you have a child that you think has dyslexia or has a diagnosis of dyslexia, then you can put that in there, that your child's team gets specifically trained for dyslexia and how it might manifest, or how it, you know, things that you could do in the classroom for them. So side note, sorry.
And I was just going to share kind of, again, looking for ways along the way to celebrate. Abby and I just joined a book club that is sort of a regional, like there's several counties that my understanding is that the Department of Education is supporting, and they sent out books that are excellent. But the part that I wanted to celebrate, into addition to that resource, is my understanding during that last week's conversation was that there are 50 local teachers also taking the study at the same time, which I just thought that was fabulous to be able to have that.
Yeah.
When we had a Dyslexia 101, this was just in one town. There was a couple from a couple neighboring towns, but there were at least 50 people in the room. It was like 45 to 50 people,
and
mostly educators. Yeah, but it was mostly educators.
And even doctors and such. So pediatricians also locally are asking a lot of, wanting to learn and being more open, because that's, they're seeing it a lot. I mean, I think that's, for any of us, if we don't know and we're able to say we don't know, but then to learn, then that should be celebrated. And that's what I guess I see is happening a lot.
And I was going to say too, like you were talking about continued training. I think I've been so grateful to the teachers who have been open to us sharing too, who want to learn more, who want to know how to help their students. I've been super grateful for that. And we've had a lot of that.
That's awesome. Because I don't hear that very often. I shouldn't say very often. I don't hear that as often as I should. As an educator myself, it's very disheartening to hear when somebody is like, no, I know what I need to know. Or they just don't listen when a parent is explaining. So that I'm glad to hear that your experiences have been better than that.
Well, we're choosing to focus on those too. Another thing that I learned along the way is that we're all human, and each of the people that we meet along the way also have their own story. Like, that's not real profound to say that, but it's been important to remember, especially with sharing our story and then people making the connection, like either their own child maybe was not identified and they're carrying that guilt, or another student.
Or a parent.
Then
their parents.
And so there's a lot, and people share with us very often, adult dyslexic sharing their story. Like we talked, a lot of things have changed, but a lot of things haven't changed either, but there's progress being made. But I don't use a different word, but I'm going to use the word shame. I think we talked a little bit about guilt, but something that I really want to be a part of is shattering the shame around dyslexia. So each of us as individuals, as parents, within our family, within the community, and then through our business ultimately too, because there really shouldn't be any shame around it. It's a different way of learning, or of how your brain is wired. So if anything, we want to learn to celebrate that, but then also honor that there is a struggle. So we don't want to just be like, oh, this should all, because it's not. It's probably always going to be a struggle in some way.
Right. And we have this weird tendency as humans to think if we struggle, it's not good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you go, and again, I go back to my analogy of the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. If that butterfly didn't struggle, we wouldn't have butterflies.
Right. Absolutely. Like, so I had shared that my son was working on a job application, and we kind of were dealing with that. Like, okay, it feels important to share because it could impact how I work that I'm dyslexic, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like it'll be perceived as something that this is a great thing.
Right.
But then we were able to talk about, well, what are some of the strengths? You know, you're incredibly perseverant, you know, those kind of mm-hmm. skills that definitely an employer would be looking for.
Right.
So, and back to the beginning of just even learning, how do we talk about it? How do we tell our story? How do we, you know, we're all of your listeners, all of us are strong advocates for our children, but we're all kind of walking that line, especially me as he's getting older, that I'm hopefully have been able to pass over for him to be able to advocate for himself long-term. So.
Yeah, self-advocacy is a huge, huge skill necessary for any of our students who learn differently, whether that is titled as dyslexia, dysgraphia, ADHD, traumatic brain injury, whatever it is, you know. And so that is a very key skill, and I'm happy to hear that you are cognizant and focused on making sure that he has some of those skills, because it's a good skill for anyone to have, but it's even more important for our kiddos who learn differently to have as well.
Well, and I think a big part of that too is making sure that they have the confidence, because I think they lose the confidence a whole lot in the educational process, which is really where our business has grown from, is building the confidence back up.
Yeah, so that's a perfect segue. So let's talk about the business.
I was going to say initially, like it's... the journey can be very overwhelming and hard, and at times a lot harder than it seems like it needs to be. So that was our original, is that we wanted to, original concept for the business is that it would be for parents. And we have a subscription box, and our thought would be send a monthly box that would be both an encouragement and have resources. And then our feedback that we got from people as they were getting the boxes to shift, that their hope was that it would shift a little bit more to be for their child. So we have shifted. And Abby, if you just want to tell really quickly what business is that okay to go ahead and start?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when you want me to share, or if you want me to share your website, let me know. Because I do, I mean, it's scrolling across the bottom, the how to get there, but I do actually have your website pulled up and I can share it if you want me to.
Okay, perfect. Well, we actually have a box here too that we can kind of show a little bit. So the basis, we as parents and as individuals really believe that literature is still a very important, it's a core value of our family. You know, literature can change the world, and just because our children have struggles with reading and with language, I don't want them to be left out of it. So that's where this concept really was born from, so that they're not left out of the conversation.
Critical thinking skills, vocabulary development, difficult themes, all of those are some,
right.
Those are some of the aspects.
Right. So we curate a book adventure box every month, and it comes with a, you start by you open the story map of surprises, and it's a
origami.
This time it's a wax seal. I'm gonna test it here. Opened it.
And this typically we try to keep our box of surprise, meaning
yes.
What the story is, but we've decided we're gonna reveal some of it today.
Well, thank you very much.
We're visual learners, so we assume that would help other people to understand a little bit more what to expect.
So their child opens the wax seal. Sorry, I don't know how to do this.
There you go. Now it's in there. Yeah.
Story map of surprises. So they follow along and they open.
So everything has an audio piece and a visual, like both eye and ear reading. because we feel like that's really important. And we do always include everything's wrapped. So, and then they unwrap it as the story goes. And we do to include a physical book for a lot of reasons. One of the main purposes of our box is to both build and maintain self-confidence. And depending on whatever their reading level may be, they still want to be able to experience the stories that are age appropriate or of interest to them
at the same level. So our box focus, I don't think we said this, is publisher book recommended 8 to 12 year old.
Okay.
So that middle grade books. So,
and then we're hoping to build like hope, confidence, and bookshelves. So the book, there's also ways to experience it in an audio way, but we think that this will give a child an opportunity if they want to read it or able to read it, to read parts, to read with family members,
or to read along with the audio if they, or listen to it and then put, have the book on their bookshelf that they have a physical reminder that, hey, I read that book. I may not have, I read it like there. I don't even think that would enter the thought process of my son, because he almost exclusively ear reads if he has the choice. He loves, loves to listen to books. He does not like to eye read books. So, but I also think as he puts his books up on the shelf, he's said, yes, these are all books that I've read. But he has that physical reminder that he has read those. It's not just where he wouldn't have that if it was only the audio. It would be harder.
Right. And one of the, sorry to interrupt you, but one of the great things about our world today is that hundreds of thousands of people are ear reading through Audible books and whatever other platform they use to hear those books. And I have a cousin who every month, that's the only way that she gets her reading in, is because she's got three kids and she's constantly busy and doing this and that and the other thing. And so at the end of the month, she's like, okay, well, these were the books that I read this month. And every one of them was read to her in the traditional sense. And so, yeah, that's absolutely perfect because, you know, she's counting them. And I don't understand why anybody else wouldn't count. I mean, I've counted them when I've read them. Like, oh yeah, I read that book.
Right.
You don't say whether you eye read it or ear read it. You just read it.
And right. It's also like in regards to IEPs or 504s, it's often an accommodation. So it's normalizing and practicing using those types of accommodations, especially as content gets harder or if they were to do post-secondary.
And through life, right? Like, so it's taking it, reading strictly out of the classroom and making a fun experience. So it's a fun book adventure, a story adventure in a box is really what it is. So the one piece we didn't talk about too is we always include a grown-up guide. So this is expanding, and it has a little version of the map here on the front, so the grown-up can follow along. It has resources on where you can access the audio version of it, and then as you go through the map, and the packages are all numbered as you go. So like, the number one was the book, and then this little pouch is number two. So then there's an explanation of how that might make the story come to life at that point.
Wow.
So that way, as a parent, you understand the story. If you're not reading it, we encourage you to be a part of it too, if you want, or listen to it on your own or read it on your own. And then when you get to that chapter and or page number, then you can open the next item.
Okay. This sounds very, very wonderful. How long does it take you to put one of these concepts together? Not the actual physical box, but is it just the two of you?
It's several weeks. Yeah, several weeks. Because even it's just, we're very intentional about curating the books too. So we're trying to make, have the books all very accessible, like through a library app. We really love the Hoopla library app, and we're not entirely sure if that's a nationwide app. So if anybody knows, we would love to know that.
I have not heard of it, so I don't know, but I'm not up on every single app that's out there either.
Or Libby or Overdrive. Overdrive, I think, is switching over.
Overdrive, I've heard of. That's nationwide.
The difference is that Hoopla is multi-use license, so you can, any, you don't have to wait to check the book. So, it's an Ohio-based company, which we didn't know that when we started either. So we think that's part of the reason we have access to it here. But it's a great app. But there's also, I mean, there's Libby, there's Audible, there's audiobooks.com, Learning Ally, Bookshare. Those are all ways to access the audio too.
And to answer your question a little bit more about how long it takes, we do, I wanted to share too that our families and our children are involved. They're part of that process. So it's kind of like dyslexia approved and tested. we have it, every box is different, but every box has some of the same elements. So one of them is a minimal reading game that you can add to your family. And so we play all of those to try those out. And the reason for that, that's one of the things that we've heard from a lot of adults, is they did not like, and they do not like playing games for fear of embarrassment. Because a lot of games have a lot of reading. So we found a lot of very, very wonderful, fun, minimal reading games. And then we try those, and then we add another visual or audio way for to learn the game in addition to the reading.
Like a YouTube video, how to play kind of thing.
So those are the elements where it takes a lot of time. And we're happy to do that because we want it to be the best, most unique experience. And to offer something that wasn't available to us, and we're hoping that it helps the journey. And this isn't for the purpose of remediation. The purpose, at least for me, my reason for doing it, and I think my son's reason for wanting to be a part of it, is to, one, let other people, other kids know that they're not alone, because that is something that's not talked, at least in our experience, hasn't been talked a lot about, like even to know who else in, you know, in the classroom.
Right.
And to both build and maintain that self-confidence, because the reading will come with work or remediation.
Or workarounds.
Yeah. And adapting. Yeah. But self-confidence, once it's lost, is very hard to gain back. So that's for me.
Like, and can do a lot of damage.
My why is that, unfortunately, because our journey was a little longer than we had hoped it would be, as far as that finding out what we have, what we were working with, and how to best maneuver that, there was some of those things lost that are harder to get back. And it, it has left, the journey part has left its mark on us, and not all of that in a positive way. So this is our response to that. So I just wanted to share that part.
And you asked how long it takes us. So we're very intentional about the books that we choose, not only that they're accessible, but they're a great story. Like, we want it to be really engaging. And so that's always the first part, right? is finding that, which we have them planned out, you know, a certain amount of time. But yeah, it takes several weeks for us, for each box concept to put together, because we have from 8 to, we've had up to 16 items, which is, we think, too many. But depending on the length of the book, they're usually around 5 to 7 hours audio time. So one thing that we really encourage, that it's a great way to do your reading homework, where the
like
kids
are required,
the required, you know, nightly reading homework, because it's fun, and it's just doing it right. Like, so, I got to the point personally where I just said with my son, like, you absolutely can listen. And I was really grateful when there was a study that came out, I think it was last spring, that said that the same parts of the brain light up when you are listening to read text, or I reading it. And that was very affirming to me, kind of what we were talking about earlier, just that, yeah, you read it. It's a different way of accessing it. Cause we certainly wouldn't say somebody reading and Braille, you know, to touch, that they're not reading, because they're not taking it in through their eyes. So
exactly.
Very affirming to me. And I just want my kids to still love books. I mean, they've always loved books. He was the youngest. And so we were reading this type of book with my daughter, especially. And then, you know, my two boys would come in. So he has this great love of reading, and I don't want to lose it because he's been told he can't.
Right.
So, right.
And my son, he has listened to audiobooks from a very young age, and always loved it, and went on trips and all that too. So that, some of that was the spark for this process is to be able to provide this. Is it helpful for you for us to share some of this? Is this helping to understand what we're doing, or would you have to?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, this is great.
And we don't have to go through all of it. We'll just kind of give some of the main elements.
Okay. So this comes in the story, and this particular book is about a medieval adventure back in time. Like he goes back in time. And so this would be an example of something we would put in. So it's this amazing.
Oh, wow.
Where they can, this one is particularly castle, that they can build a castle with these clips. And because it takes place at the Louvre when it was a castle, not when it was a museum. Other part of it.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, they can be doing this and keeping their hands busy while they're focusing on listening to the material. So this is just one of the elements.
And we also try to choose things that are likely to build on the strengths and interests of your children, in addition to creating an experience that recognizes the difference without focusing on it, on the struggle. So
like hands-on, creative, there's almost always a maker element to each box. And then something that we really feel very strongly about is that we must celebrate along the way, you know, no matter what the size victory. And so after your child has gotten through this book that, you know, it's not a small book.
It's a good right? sized book.
Yep. That they have a way of marking that other than just even the book on the shelf. So every month there's a pin that is included that they would hang on. So the first time that you subscribe, you get this flag, and we just feel it.
Bumpy roads often lead to beautiful destinations. Oh, that's gorgeous.
Yeah. So it's something they can hang in their room. Sorry. I'm glad you read it.
That's okay.
But then they get a pin. I don't know if you can see them on here or not. It has to do with the book. But there's little things that it exemplifies the book, and it's a little surprise pouch that it comes in, that it's a little, you know, and they pin it on So then their pin collection and their bookshelves grow every month, and they can, you know, it's just that tangible reminder of who they are and what they're capable of.
And so neither of you, and we didn't say this at the beginning, but neither of you are teachers, right? Neither of you are diagnosticians, right? So you are moms who have seen a need, and you're doing this awesome. I mean, from an educator's point of view, like, you're hitting all the things. You know, because the more modalities you use, the better you're going to learn something. So the visual, the audio, the tactile, you know, the kinesthetic, if they get up and move around and do anything. I mean, those are like the key components that if you can get those into every lesson, your child learning is going to just explode with the amount and the interest levels. And I mean, you're just like, it's just truly amazing to hear all these great things that you are doing. And if we could get more people, more educators doing something like that in the classroom, you know, and the fact that you're focusing on the positives. I love the celebration at the end. That's such a key component, again, to building that self-esteem level that is sadly damaged in most people. Before they get that name that is what drives their brain to be the way that they are. Right. And so I'm just in awe, ladies, to be honest. I mean, it's just, I don't remember how I even found you guys, but I'm so thankful for whatever brought me to you, because I just am just in awe. I don't...
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience, because I love what you're doing with helping give. I mean, you seem to be across the board of helping professionals and parents and give voice to the very important process that affects their everyday, you know, students' everyday lives. that
yeah, it became a journey. I wrote a book and it released in 2020, and it was very well received. And around the same time that I was wrapping up the book before it actually published was when the pandemic hit. And so it was like, how do I tell, because that's what the book is. It's 9 stories of different families who have gone through a special education journey. And some of them were still involved in it, and some of them have already gotten out of it, and, you know, just what their experiences were. And I thought, there's more than 9 people in the world who are going through these experiences. And from an educator point of view, I unfortunately had encountered too many professionals who had the wrong thinking about children who learn differently. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to develop this like weekly thing and show all the wonderful things that are happening with people who learn differently as adults, but even as they're going through it sometimes. And then, you know, like yourselves having this business that you're doing now to try to improve for, I mean, this, I know you designed it because of your journeys with your children, but this is truly something that any child could benefit from.
Right.
And that is something we've been trying to figure out, is that any child should enjoy it. But you had said about like with classrooms, that's something that we're exploring right now, is with some local reading programs. We want to reach out and potentially get a grant and or in classrooms that we could provide the boxes that they could go through those together. And we've chosen currently to still keep the focus on dyslexia just because it is unique. It's not something that, at least that has existed or didn't exist for us.
We couldn't find anything like it.
Right. We are not educators, but you have to learn a lot along the way. So we have a lot of the things that we have found that worked with our own children, like I said, they're a part of the process as well. So all of the boxes have like a different, like something fun that you can practice writing or some of the other elements, because play is really the best way to learn. So it's kind of, and that's how I think each of us parents, it is weaving in the things that both focused on strengths and maybe some of those gap areas into play. And that's our hope, is that this is a positive experience with the book, because at some point, some kids, it hasn't been as positive anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we have about 8 minutes before we have to totally wrap up. So I don't want to ask any more questions before I make sure that you have said what you wanted to say today, because as I told you, this is your chance to tell your story the way you want to tell it.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
I don't think so. I think we've covered it pretty much. Yeah. we really want, it's that positive experience. I think too, we want it to be, part of the games, part of it's the reading together or the other activities. We really want it to be fun family time, because I think we've both experienced this, and many other people that we talk to, dyslexia really takes away. And because of the struggle to get through the homework or to keep on top of homework or whatever, it causes strife in the family. So to have something that would, you know, come to your door, that's fun in a box every month, but is also hitting some of those needed activities and goals. I don't know that it, I wish that I would have had it when he was younger.
And time is already limited. So a lot of these things, I mean, we researched and found them through the years. But we wanted to take one thing off of people's plate, that you don't have to spend the hours and hours and hours researching and trying it and spending $100 to get 20 of them when you wanted one. A little bit of a chance to try different things. And sometimes it doesn't, at least for us, I'm like, I'll try whatever. Like if we try, it may work, it might not work. But just to be able to weave that into your everyday. And like we were talking earlier, most kids are required to do 20 or 30 minutes of reading a night. So why not just get the box and spread that 5 to 6 hours out over, you know, have your, each night you have those 20 minutes and you've done the book, and then you've broken that up with different fun things to unwrap along the way. So yeah. We do this because I think that's probably something I want to say is we're doing this because we believe in it. This is not something we necessarily need to do or set out to do.
We didn't set out to create a dyslexia. I mean, you know, long ago.
Right.
Yeah. About for the business part, I'm a social worker by trade, and I've just really seen the difference of the impact of positive things versus negative thinking. And so for me, it's very personal, and we're doing it because we believe in it, and we genuinely want to provide something for other families.
Yeah. I wanted to pull up really quickly the shop section, because I know you both have the same mug and you both are, I think, wearing the same shirt today. So yeah. I presumed that those were available on your website. So I was just looking at them but I thought, well, I'm not just going to look for myself. I'll share with everybody.
These shirts will be available for pre-order. And actually, it's funny. Some of this concept had come out of our previous when the box and the concept was strictly for the moms, but we've also personally worn them, and we know other people have worn them. Even if you're not going to wear this shirt, it's as strong as a dyslexia mother on it. If you can't see.
Oh, okay.
Whether it's kind of that inner voice or wearing it underneath your sweater,
right.
Like it's you have a better explanation of it, I think.
I'm very visual, so like always through our IEP, like I have power shoes, like leopard shoes that I wear to all my IEP meetings, because it just kind of like is a visual reminder. Or we both have these necklaces
we don't always dress exactly alike.
But just that reminder that you're not alone. And like, I just happen to have, I have a conference today. I'll probably close it, but it's like a reminder to me of our story and everything's going to be okay. And sometimes, like, I think originally I think there was a sticker or something on there, like mama bear, like people talk about mama bear, like thinking of that as being a negative thing. But for us, it's like, no stone unturned. That was what the sticker says, is like, you do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. So that's what strong as a dyslexia mom means, is like, I would do any of it, obviously, all over again. But it has taken a fair amount of choice to how we're going to approach the journey and the process.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
But yeah, and our mugs, like that's something that was in a recent box.
Yeah.
Okay.
It may or may not be. Like a lot of times we have things that are just exclusive to subscribers.
Gotcha. And we haven't talked about the price. Do you want to share that, or do you want me to just send people to the website to find it?
Yeah. Each month, the box is $55 per month, plus shipping. If you are not local, we do have local pickup in the It's northern Dayton, Ohio area is where Sioux City or New Bremen. We've partnered with an amazing toy store called Topsy Turvy Toys. Give them a shout out too, because they provide amazing. She's very intentional about what she stocks, and so she is giving us a place to do local pickup each month. So that's an amazing gift and service for everybody else, because it saves the shipping if you're local, but we can definitely ship it too. So it's $55 a month.
And we've thought through that price quite a bit.
Yeah.
we want to provide,
I'm sure.
But generally you saw a few of the items, but there would be like eight or so more. And some of them are big, like what she shared. Others, if they're small or anything in between. But we do feel like it's a good quality and then also an experience. So, I think experiences are what are going to be remembered.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Recently, just for fun so she could understand what it was like, my son did a box with his grandma. So that things like that would be things that we encourage too, is it's an opportunity to create a memory or an experience, whether that's as a subscriber or just trying one box and with the holidays coming up and such. But it helped, I think, her understand both his strengths and struggles a little bit more. as well. So that was a good experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, ladies, as I said just a few minutes ago, I'm truly in awe of both of you and what you are doing. And I wish you nothing but years and years of success with this. And I'm just thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing what you're doing and for being on today. It's been a great pleasure to get to know you both a little bit more and to learn about your journey and this box. And make sure if you're watching that you reach out to their website and you connect with them. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.